welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher, in conversation with Lynn Worsley, clinical psychologist and director of the Resilience Centre, on dissociative identity disorder, or multiple personalities, what's also known as a freeze response to a range of significant life upheavals. So, if we're after a definition, how would Lynn put it?
It used to be called multiple personality disorder, and now it's called dissociative identity disorder, shortened to DID. And essentially what it is when somebody is able to split into a different personality. So it might be that the body has 5, 6, 7, maybe 10, maybe even 20 personalities in response to various stages of their lives. Now, an example would be somebody who would have, maybe 5 personalities, and that might be that one personality is a male and aggressive, another personality is a teenager and a female and a bit coy and promiscuous, another personality might be an older person who's like a mother and is very prim and proper and exactly right, does everything perfectly. Another personality might be someone who is incredibly intelligent and does absolutely everything academically correct, but doesn't have much of an emotion. It might be another personality who is a little tiny child who doesn't speak very much and just sucks their thumb and sits in the corner. So it's a very interesting phenomena.
Yeah.
We used to be quite frightened of it. There's not a lot written about it in the mainstream, but we are seeing more and more of this in our clinics. It's pretty hard to treat.
Yes, I could imagine. Can I ask you how common it is? So you're obviously seeing more and more cases. How common is it in our community?
It's a bit hard to say a ratio or work out the commonality of it, because there are many therapists and psychiatrists who actually don't see it, which is interesting.
Wow.
So what happens is, because oftentimes if you go to a psychiatrist or a medical professional and their appointments are only about 15 to 20 minutes long, the personality can stay maintaining for that period of time and they only may only see one personality. When you have a longer appointment, like an hour or a bit more, over time that personality starts to split and wear out, and so they start bringing back other personalities. So it's hard to know. I think in our area of expertise with schizophrenias and bipolar disorder, quite often times the multiple personality has been misdiagnosed. And it really is a multiple personality or a dissociative identity disorder, and it's not really bipolar. So one of the examples would be someone who comes in and they've had periods of time where they've been out of control and done wild and stupid things and, spend lots of money and they've become, a bit impulsive. And then, another time, probably another couple of days, they're like sitting quietly in the corner, just curled up and rocking or sucking their thumb. And that would look very much like someone with bipolar, with an extreme of a manic episode and a depressive episode. But actually, when you start unpacking that, that's two different people.
Okay, which leads to the question, how does this happen? How's this formed in someone's life, Lynn?
From my observation, and I've seen a number of people with dissociative identity, and I have had a bit of training in that. I think I've never had enough training, I'd like to say. It's a sort of area of our profession that I think we can keep training till we die.
The
I think
cows
it's
come
huge.
Home. Yes.
It's huge.
Yeah.
But how it forms is basically a child, most often who has been abused as a child, but it sometimes happens when a child hasn't been physically or sexually abused. It can happen independent of that. But what happens is, it's when a child is, particularly a child with a high IQ, their brain is very smart, and in order to cope with the abuse, part of their brain has gone freeze, just freeze, and cut off any feelings from this and dissociate, or disassociate from the experience.
Which we've spoken about in another podcast on the issue of trauma. So that's a must listen.
Yes.
That's a background of this, I suppose.
Yes. So with that freeze response, the child then zooms into this disassociative state. Now, at the time that the abuse has occurred, the age of that child can actually freeze as well. So, for example, if a child has been abused at the age of 3 or 4, they may have a disassociated state at 3 and 4. Then the child comes away, they go and do something else, and because they're frozen in that space, they'll do something else and they forget. Now, let me explain a little bit better. When I was a child, I used to play this little game, and I'd play, it's like mothers and fathers, we call it Jenny and John, and I always wanted to be Jenny. And Jenny was, you know, the good girl. And so I'd play this good girl, and we galloped around on brooms that became horses. You know, it was a great game, okay? And then my mother would call us in for dinner. So I'd go in and play, have dinner. I forget about even doing that game and didn't even think about it again until the next afternoon at 5 p.m.,
Back
comes Jenny, and she's playing on this horse, and I became Jenny, you know. So that's what children do. Children do that very, very well.
Okay.
And that's how they play. And so the process of abuse, they use that same strength to cut off and become a character to cope with that abuse. Now, they don't say, oh, I'm going to become Jenny and be this person. They just do it as a freeze response. And so they go off and they do their other things and they may not remember that. And that's, I guess, the person who's doing the abusing sees it as being, oh, it doesn't affect them. I'll keep going.
They're okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Is it always abuse that will trigger this?
No, it isn't always abuse that triggers that. At the moment, we've got cases where there hasn't been a reported abuse and there isn't a memory of abuse, and we don't go digging for it either.
Okay.
It's not good form to actually do that. But what we do know is that some cases, particularly for very high intelligent children, they can split into a number of different spaces and personalities in order to cope with various things in their life anyway.
Yes.
And that could be just being, picked on in the playground or, you know, ostracized at home for something. And they split, go into a different state in order to cope with that. And now over time, as the child develops, those states become more prominent. With abuse or trauma, quite often you see a dissociative state or dissociative identity disorder masked until they're probably in their, you know, late 30s and comes out in their 40s.
What a moment when that happens.
Yes,
though.
Yes. And quite often it comes out when the child, when they themselves have children of a similar age. And I have one case where we've been able to see probably in a nearly 80 different personalities. And this is someone who's been extremely traumatized and extremely abused and under the radar with all the authorities, and unfortunately a terribly difficult circumstance. But that person has been able to manage their life extremely well by the very fact that they've been able to work with, I guess, the child parts have been able to play like they would if they were a child. They've been able to colour in or play in the sandpit or do things with their own children, and that's been a very healing part for them. I have other people that I see who have, you know, 5 or 6 personalities, maybe up to about 9 or 10 in another one, and those people have been able to embrace those personalities.
Okay.
And see them as different parts that are all make up the one person, and it becomes quite rewarding to get to know them. It's almost like having a group therapy.
You're listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm in conversation with Lynn Worsley, Director of the Resilience Centre. All of what Lynn's talking about can have a crippling impact on people's lives well into adulthood.
It has a huge impact.
Yeah.
But it comes with its strengths as well. Because, you know, remember, it's a very intelligent brain that does this. I sit back and absolutely admire the intelligence that might be able to do this. It might be that, you know, you have a number of personalities that are a whiz with the computer. You might have others that are fantastic at maths. You might have another one that can write and tell stories. You might have another one that has a legal brain. But they don't all have that same way of thinking. So being able to split into different ones means you can concentrate. Now for me, I'm not dissociative, and my trouble is that I can't stay on one topic at one time. I'm all over the place.
Yes, okay.
Concentrating is difficult. For someone with a dissociative state, they can go into one personality and that can concentrate. That is if they're doing well with that. If they're not, what happens is that it's like having, 10 people over your shoulder all competing for your attention all the time.
Can those around this person help much? And how can they better understand where they are, where they're coming from?
Yes, if you're around someone who has been diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, it's really important not to be frightened.
Okay.
It's not a scary thing. We've had so many horrible things about, multiple personalities and schizophrenia and split personality. Not got a good press.
No.
But, really, when you sit and think about it, the intelligence that it takes in order to split is huge. So we need to sit back and be admiring to start with.
Okay.
And secondly, if you're somebody who has, who is close to someone with DID, ask. Tell me about your different parts. Tell me about somebody. I noticed somebody else the other day and they seemed a bit younger than you. Tell me a little bit about them. And it might be, you might get, there's no one else.
Yes,
and that might be that one person who doesn't want to know that everyone else is there.
Yes.
But when there is somebody that comes out who's a bit different, you say, tell me a little bit about you.
That's a really challenging thing to step up to, though,
isn't
it? It's
very challenging. But once you do embrace that, it's really helpful to actually understand the different parts and the strengths of each of them and how they contribute to the whole. We used to talk about integration, and that's a little bit of a hot topic at the moment. Integration would be, let's make them all become one. And that's not always helpful because there's some really valuable parts that don't want to become one. They want to contribute as a team. So I tend to think about, if I'm working with someone or getting close to someone who's got many different personalities, is to think about that I'm meeting the team. And the team is all going to come to with their various strengths. And as a person who's working with the team, I need to be ready to embrace each of their strengths.
Yeah. This is where I wanted to go. So as a therapist, how do you help these people?
As a therapist, I'm curious. I'm always in a curious state.
Yeah.
As a therapist, I will give time. I'm often very impatient and my colleagues will tell me, she's always going fast.
Yeah.
But as a therapist, working with them is being, being patient. Sometimes it's just about just giving a quiet space, particularly if a little personality comes out and they don't speak. Having toys, having things to cuddle, and having a space that is safe. Completely safe.
It'd be an extraordinary challenge as a therapist, but what a gift to have someone who trusts and accepts you in your multiple personalities.
Yes, yes. And the gift is also two ways, I'd like to say. So for me as a therapist, I would say this is my most challenging area of work, and I have learnt an enormous amount from my clients. And for those people who are also working with people with DID, they will say the same, that nobody is the same. The treatment is not the same. You have to be all the time ready to make sure you're safe, keeping a safe place for them, and being aware that the intelligence that has enabled the brain to do this split needs to be respected.
Yes.
And not come in and do a one-size-fits-all.
So what's the resolution or solution going to look like? Because I'm tempted to say as a male, I'll just rush in and how are we going to fix this? But it's probably much more nuanced than that.
It's a really good question. The best case scenario is the way I like to think about.
Yep.
The best case scenario would be, how would all of those personalities in a person like to be? So when I ask, what's the best case scenario at the beginning of therapy? The best case scenario may be that everybody feels like they're respected and heard. And it also, the best case scenario is that there might be a little bit of a hierarchy in the personalities, and having perhaps the adult in those personalities being able to take a leadership role, but training that adult to listen to the little ones and the others and acknowledge that they all have strengths. So sometimes what I'm doing is coaching the leader of the team in order to manage the team. And sometimes I'm also coaching the partners and the families around that person so that they can also embrace and love everybody in the process.
So will some of those personalities dissipate or even disappear in that process?
They may do, but that's not the aim.
Okay.
The aim is not to get rid of people. The aim is to cherish them all.
What insight. Give us an example of how this has played out in one of your clients, Lynn. It's a very rarefied area of psychology and the human condition.
There is a really good television series.
Okay, that's a good example.
Okay, there's a really good television series, Lee, that I think is worthwhile watching. And sure, it was it's a sort of Hollywoodified, but it's United States of Tara.
Oh, yes, heard about that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good one. And that's actually been advised in writing the script by some pretty key psychiatrists who have been key teachers in the area of dissociative identity. Sure, it has been sort of hammed up a little bit.
It's Hollywood.
It is Hollywood, but it does give you a very, very good glimpse of what it would be like for somebody who is carrying a number of different personalities in the one person.
And without being a spoiler, is there a resolution?
Yes, the resolution is that the family adjust and everyone adjusts and it becomes a little bit more acceptable. Although I think there's some pretty funny moments in it as well.
That's good to hear. I can only imagine what help and insight you provide for people in this particular state. Lynn Worsley, thank you again so much for your wisdom and for joining us.
Thanks, Lee.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. There are lots of resources helping people when life happens on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.